We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, away we go with Brian Driscoll.
What a day.
Hey.
What a day.
Day in the life,
that's right?
Day in the life.
Goodness gracious.
What are you going to do?
You're going to be on the phone all day. This is one of those days, Sean, where you just kind of say, oh, I'm so glad I had unlimited text and talk. Okay.
Catch your breath.
So some news today, Sean, huh?
Yes, a little bit. A little bit of big news. Jack Swarbrick stepping down as athletic director. Notre Dame, of course, made the announcement this morning. I was in the middle of doing something else, like we always are when this kind of stuff happens. I got a text that didn't really spell anything out. Of course, I go to Twitter, and there it is. So Swarbrick's going to step down. They've got a succession plan in place. Notre Dame alum and current NBC Sports chairman Peter Bavakwa is going to take the helm. In the meantime, for the next year, beginning this July 1st, Bavakwa is going to essentially work as Swarbrick's understudy. He's going to be the special assistant to the president for athletics. So it's big news. I know that this is going to hit on different sides. Some people are going to love it. Some people are going to hate it. Other people, because of what you're going to read into this, are going to have some trepidation. Sure. I guess we'll just start with you and what you think of this, Brian.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYDHealing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Sean. I had a lunch on campus about a year ago with a guy who's a pretty big donor at Notre Dame. And this was a name that was kind of floated to me about a possible replacement for Jack Swarbrick about that time. And former head of the PGA as well. And that was one of the things that was kind of discussed was obviously he's run a the concern is if it was only in the media side, it's like, well, does that really prepare you for doing this job? But, you know, he's run the PGA and, you know, Notre Dame is more like a big business like that than it is like Duke or Vanderbilt, or it's just a different animal being the athletic director at Notre Dame. So this isn't an unexpected move, Sean, from the standpoint of Jack Swarbrick being gone. I mean, how many years have you and I been hearing that, oh, well, this is his last year. This is his last year. And I honestly believe, yeah, if not for COVID, I honestly think he would have retired already. I really do. I just feel like when that all went down and the challenges that arose, there was always something that it was like, well, I need to see this through. I think the timing of this makes a ton of sense. My understanding, this is not, I'm not telling you facts. I'm just telling you what I've been told by people who would have a better idea than us, that the expectation is the TV deal and the apparel deal will likely be done before this transition is finalized. Now, obviously, Pete's going to be part of that process now, right? Since he is now going to, at least as of now, in July 1st, will be employed by Notre Dame. I don't believe either's done right now, but the understanding is that Jack is going to still have a big role in finalizing those deals, and now you've got the new guy coming in well with that.
And I think that's important because, like, you look at where Jim Phillips is out there in the ACC and everybody talks about this bad TV deal that the ACC got. Jim Phillips inherited that out there and he's been left to deal with it. So right. I think it's very good that Pete Pavakwa can be part of this, part of the negotiations with these deals getting done and not just be left with someone else's contract, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Right. Cause he's going to inherit a lot of brand new coaches. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the right, he's not going to be making a football change most likely anytime soon, a women's basketball change, a men's basketball change. Hopefully none of those three things are happening anytime soon. So the three new hires, and we'll get into all that later, are kind of there. It's going to be basically, what are you going to do with these money deals? What are you going to do with, and these are areas where I'm actually confident that this is going to get done. This is a guy that was the head of, you know, NBC Sports, Sean. I mean, NBC Sports Group. So I know you've got some feelings on that we'll get into here in a little bit, but that's all part. I'm like, I'm okay. Those deals will be good. I mean, this guy knows the business. As long as he's not a complete, you know, boob, he's going to be able to come in and know how to get those and know the value. He's a Notre Dame alum, obviously played as a walk-on under Lou Holtz. So he's familiar with the Notre Dame football tradition. The other side of that though, is my concern. The flip side of it is, with the money stuff and all those type of things, I feel real confident that he's going to thrive there because that's what we know he can do. He can work those deals. You don't get the head of the PGA. You don't get to be the head of NBC Sports Group if you don't know how to make deals that are going to benefit you and your client. But there's a lot of other things that are facing Notre Dame and college football, college athletics, that I don't know how he's going to handle those. NIL, the legislature, being employees and all those type of things, and players being, you know, I don't know where he's going to stand on those. I don't know what background he has on those. So those are always some of the unknowns. And Jack Swarbrick, you know, conference realignment, those type of things. The NCAA, is going to live or die, all those kind of things. And we kind of know where Jack Swarbrick stood on those. I don't know his experience with those things or his belief on those things or whatever that case may be. So that part's the unknown. The business side looks like it's going to be smooth. This other side is the one that's a little bit more of a question mark. Not that he's not going to do a good job. It's just, how the heck can I know? Because he has no experience working in that universe.
Right. You look at his background. He's a very sharp guy. He's never worked directly in college athletics. You know, the closest thing is just this relationship with Notre Dame being the chair of NBC Sports. But like you said, you know, he's worked with, you know, he's worked in golf. He's worked with the PGA. He got a law degree, but he graduated from Notre Dame in 93 and then got a law degree from Georgetown 4 years later. And he's really kind of skyrocketed up the charts. He was in, you know, like the 40 under 40 list, you know, a few years back, you know, when he was a little bit younger. He is a 93 Notre Dame alum. So he's north of 40 now, like a lot of us, but, you know, just, he's, I think one of the big things as you look back over his resume is he has, as you said, the business side, he has experience on both sides of these TV deals. Like when you look at the upcoming TV deal, as an example, both were, you know, signing rights deals when he was with the PGA and also, of course, signing rights deals in the 4 years since he's been with NBC between the NFL and, you know, other, you know, the Big Ten deal being the biggest recent one, that Big Ten contract bringing Big Ten football, you know, primetime football to NBC and all that kind of stuff. So he's worked on both sides of this over the course of his career.
And that's the interesting part, right? Isn't that, I mean, that ultimately what drives a lot of this success, Sean, is are you able to negotiate those deals that are going to benefit your institution?
Right.
Those are things that like, okay, with him and Jack Swarbrick now both involved in this, you feel good that Notre Dame's going to get some big deals. I had somebody reach out to me yesterday who's sort of a big wig at Notre Dame, somebody that was one of the people that got me the news that Marcus Freeman deal was done, you know, which allowed us to break that. Irish Breakdown broke that on our board, that news. And he's one of those guys that's kind of always been on top of, hey, this is what's going on, because he has access to that. One of the things he told me, I mean, I can't throw numbers out. He asked me not to throw numbers out, Sean. But the thing he told me is the range that they're now talking about with the TV deal, that the negotiations are now centered around, just looking at the Notre Dame money, you're going to talk about a double to potentially close to tripling what their current TV revenue is. If this is the kind of hire that maybe helps take them over the finish line, you're adding a guy that knows how to get these big deals done. You know, I mean, look, let's be real. If you're part of the PGA, if you're the head of the PGA Tour, if you're part of the NBC Sports Group, you're negotiating much bigger deals than what Notre Dame's going to get. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because you're working with the whole Big Ten Conference and you're working with the whole PGA and those type of things. So this is a guy that has experience doing that. Now you have another, let's just say, heavyweight in this conversation, Sean. You now say, okay, those numbers that I was given yesterday, and this doesn't even include the ACC money, and I gave you the range, you know, off air. Those are going to be some big moves if he's able to kind of help finalize that kind of deal. And that's just the TV deal. We're not even talking about what the apparel deal is going to be, because the apparel deal is probably going to, I mean, it's going to have to happen before the TV deal, because the apparel deal expires before the TV. Right. It's technically kind of the negotiation window has already expired.
Yeah.
For that, where the TV deal has a little bit more of a little bit longer life on it. So that part of it, Sean, it's hard to complain about that. It's the other side. Does he know how to run an athletic department? You know, what's his hiring and firing process going to be like? What's his relationship going to be like with conference commissioners? What's his relationship going to be like with the College Football Playoff Committee, with all the different, you know, the organizations that Jack Swarbrick's been a mover and shaker in? You know, and when we talk about the College Football Playoff expansion, it was a couple ADs and another guy, and then Jack Swarbrick. You know, is Pete Bavakwa going to be part of that? Is he going to have carry that same weight? Those are all questions that I think are fair to ask. It's not, I won't assume the negative or the wrong. It's just those are going to be the things that are ultimately going to determine the long-term success of this hire. I think the immediate success, Sean, is going to be with these, when these deals come out, we're going to like, hey, I think people are going to be happy with the numbers that Notre Dame is going to get on those two deals. He's going to be the guy that's taken over in that sort of that universe. So I think the start is going to be strong. The question is going to be, can he handle the other side, the non-revenue side of running the Notre Dame athletic department, which, let's be honest, Sean, is a completely different animal than any other AD job in America. Let's be real about that.
You're right. It's one thing to crunch numbers and you know, deal in con- you know, again, he's a lawyer, so to be able to deal in contracts and the details of these contracts. But now there's obviously much more interpersonal relationships that come into play when you're talking about all the different coaches that you're the boss of. I do find it interesting that just a few weeks ago, and we touched on this briefly on IB Nation Sports Talk, when Marcus Freeman and a bunch of his assistants went to the Kentucky Derby with their wives, they were the guest of Pete Bavakwa down there. And he was, you know, NBC obviously televising the Kentucky Derby, but they were his guests down there. So it sounds like he spent a lot of time with the most important, not to take away any importance from any other coach, but, you know, being completely honest, he spent some time with the most important coach at Notre Dame before he became his boss, and with a lot of guys on that staff as well. So I think that's at least, you know, was maybe sort of a glimmer of the importance that he saw in that, you know, maybe being able to spend some time with those guys down there at an event like that.
But, you know, I said earlier, Sean, that one of the things is I was told, like I said, this was a name that was mentioned to me over a year ago. This is not something that just happened within the last 3 days. Another thing that I was told today is this wasn't even originally going to get released today. It's going to happen somewhat soon, but it started to get released today because people were starting to kind of get out a little bit. And so Notre Dame had to speed up the process a little bit of making the announcement. And so that's another aspect of it. But this has been something that's been in the works for a while. This wasn't decided like 2 weeks ago. You know, like I guarantee when he met with Marcus Freeman, this was the direction they were going to go. And, you know, I think, and, you know, again, this is a Notre Dame alum that played football at Notre Dame. I think he was a punter. He was a walk-on punter.
Walk-on punter, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, so you'd hope that he's someone who's going to come in with an understanding of what the football team means to the university and the community. He would know that.
I mean, he was here during the Lou Holtz era. And
during the great period of the Lou Holtz era.
Yes, right. The great Lou Holtz, right after the national championship and up until, you know, a team that I think, as you detailed on Twitter, very easily could have won another championship, yes, if not playing for Miami. And then, of course, the 93 team that lost to Florida State that could have won a championship. He was a walk-on punter on that team. So, I mean, I don't think that the importance of independence and things like that, you know, all these different things are going to be lost on a guy like Peter Bavakwa. I wanted to go back real quick to what you were saying about the news starting to get out. I talked to Neil Ivey this morning, and we recorded an interview. It's going to be on IB Nation Sports Talk tonight, but we were originally supposed to record it at 11 a.m. We had to push it. I got a text that we had to push it back a couple of hours. It was because of this announcement. And she woke up this morning, and the other coaches woke up this morning knowing nothing about this announcement coming. They got over there, and this is what they found out. You know, all the coaches were summoned to this space when they were told about what was going on. So you're right. Like when you know how it is, especially at a place like that, when news does start to seep out, really the only way to control it is to kind of do what you just said.
Let's go ahead and get it out there.
Right. Yeah, that's right. None of the coaches knew what was going to happen this morning before this announcement was made.
My thought is that I believe that he knew that this decision was going to be happening when met with the Notre Dame coaches for the Kentucky Derby is where I'm coming. I think he knew that this was going to be the case.
Yeah.
And he knew this job was eventually going to happen. And I'll be honest, this is going to sound really petty, Sean, but one of the things that I have was told over a year ago when his name was brought up, that there were some, including like Jack Swarbrick, there were some rumblings that he might want Ron Paulus to be his successor, things like that. This was my first thought is, okay, it's not Ron Paulus. Thank God.
I mean, based on the boards, I think a lot of people have that same thought.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
Like, okay, I don't know anything about this guy, but it's not Ron Paulus. So that's a success. So, I mean, look, There's no way you can look this higher, and if you're being objective about it, say it's a bad hire. There's no way you can look at this hire and say, oh my gosh, he's going to do great at Notre Dame. We don't know, right? We don't know. You can just look at the resume and say, you know, how does his resume compare to that of Jack Swarbrick, for example? You know, what did Jack Swarbrick do before he came to Notre Dame? You know, I mean, so he was a lawyer. You know, he was involved with what you may not want this to be discussed, but, you know, was involved with the U.S. women's
gymnastics
yeah. and things along those lines. And so he actually comes to this job with a little bit more. Oh, how do I say this? I mean, really no different experience, maybe even a little bit more experience dealing in this world than what Jack Swarbrick had. You know, I think Jack Swarbrick was doing what before he came to Notre Dame? He worked with, you know, the Indiana Sports Corp, mm-hmm. which, again, were all big picture things where this is a situation where this guy is making deals now Jack was a finalist for the NCAA job that Miles Brand eventually got. So it's not like he didn't have any experience with college athletics, but this guy's been in part of the things that are now moving college athletics, which is negotiating TV deals.
Right.
So at least he has that.
And the biggest, and I think Jack the biggest question, yeah. like Jack Swarbrick had really the biggest question that we're talking about with.
Exactly.
With Bavakwa.
Exactly. Right? And that's my point. Yeah. Right. He had no experience running a department. He had no experience running an athletic department, but again, being an AD at Notre Dame isn't a typical AD job. It's not about setting schedules. That's honestly something that you are kind of putting somebody else in charge of, you know, where ADs at other schools are doing that. Your big job is you are negotiating hundreds of millions of dollars, billion dollar deals. I mean, that's the stuff that you're doing. You're pushing for the fundraising for the Crossroads project and building the new indoor facility and negotiating, you know, conference expansion and the college football playoff expansion and all those big deals and those type of things. You're not the person running some of the day to day. And so what's going to be very important, and where I believe in recent years, Jack Swarbrick at times has faltered or fallen short, is I think some of those hires have not been good enough. Ron Paulus being an example. So a big key for this job, even more so than any other AD job that I know of, Sean, is you're going to have to make sure that your associate ADs are very competent people, because they're the ones doing a lot of the day-to-day stuff in the athletic department.
Right.
And that's a big part of this job, too. I don't know what kind of hiring experience. I mean, he obviously has hiring experience, but like track record is the phrase I'm looking for here. I don't know what his hiring track record is. But that's going to be an important piece of this too. Is there going to be a shakeup in the athletic department? There are some people that flat out just need to go, if we're being honest, in the athletic department at the higher up level. Is he going to come in and shake some of that stuff up, or is it just going to, you know, do what Jack did when Jack first got here, which is, okay, I'm going to let all these coaches go a year, evaluate everything, see where everything is, and then start making decisions. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he does those type of things. And again, those are unknowns, but those are the things that are going to also be part of how he's ultimately going to be judged and evaluated. I know some alums that are happy about this. Obviously, Brady Quinn had a lot of good things to say about this. And, you know, everything I've heard about this guy so far, Sean, has been great. It sounds wonderful, but it's just this is a different animal, man. I don't know that you can ever truly be prepared for this particular job. Even if you've been an AD somewhere, I don't know if that necessarily prepares you for – because the AD at Notre Dame basically does the job of the conference commissioners more so than the job of what the Duke AD is doing. Or
he was at the negotiating table.
Right, right.
Figuring out the college football playoff expansion.
Right, right. Yeah. With the other commissioners, not the AD at Alabama.
With conference commissioners, yeah. Right. Not school.
He's sitting down with Greg Sankey, not whoever the AD at Alabama is, right? I mean, that's the difference of being the AD at Notre Dame compared to being the AD at other schools. So he's the business experience should certainly help and give people because to me, Sean, that's such an important, I mean, it sucks to be able to say that's the biggest thing, but it really is.
Well, but I mean, the benefit that he will have that Jack Swarbrick didn't is this year on the job working with Jack Swarbrick and getting familiar with all these, you know, like you said, Jack Swarbrick's first year on the job, he kind of sat back, let all the coaches do their stuff, and then started to make some evaluations and then some changes where Bavakwa was going to be on the job, and he'll get to, you know, he'll kind of get to embed himself to whatever extent he wants with a lot of these.
He's going to get to go through at least a full football season and most likely basketball season. Cause what we heard is Jack's going to step aside sometime in like the first quarter or so, first half of the year of 2024. There has been no date given yet of the specific date of departure. So clearly it's going to be one of those things that'll just be, you know, let's see how things are going in this process. And so you're right. That's a great point, Sean. He will have time to kind of sit back and evaluate, talk to people, get the lay of the land before he has to start making decisions. And he's not, he also, because sometimes you may say, well, like, is this really the right way to go about it? You know, you're going to sit here and be an understudy. I think absolutely when you consider what's at stake right now for Notre Dame over the next six to 12 months, when you look at these big deals that are happening with the TV contract, with the apparel deals, because honestly, if we really want to get to the nitty gritty of this, right, there's a lot of people saying, well, this guy's at NBC Sports. And I know you're going to want to comment on this, so I'm going to kind of set you up.
Okay.
This guy's at NBC Sports. The Big Ten just signed NBC. The Big Ten wants Notre Dame. This is another, they just got in the AAU that is, you know, key to the Big Ten, as if like Notre Dame needed that. The Big Ten wouldn't accept Notre Dame without that. That's a different story for a different day. And so is this a move for this? If anything, to me, these deals that they're about to sign are going to determine whether or not Notre Dame can remain independent moving forward. I've been told that the goal of the school is the same. They want to remain independent. This is not the biggest, the only big change we're going to see at Notre Dame in the next year either. I think the president is someone else who is not going to be at Notre Dame a whole lot longer. We're going to see a lot of the upper level leadership kind of retire and time for the new era type of thing. So there's going to be a lot going on, but this is going to be at the heart of it. If you can get the deal that right now we're hearing they're going to deal to get, that's the thing that's going to say Notre Dame can remain independent, unless there's some situation where there's two leagues and they all say you can't, we won't play you, which is not anywhere close to happening right now. So that's why this is an important time period, Sean, and why I do kind of like the transition period as opposed to just, okay, I'm retiring this date. This guy's going to take over that day, and then we go. I think having both of these guys in this situation involved in these negotiations are huge, because the deals they're about to do are going to determine, like I said, the future of Notre Dame, big all picture, because if Notre Dame's getting a $35 million deal, a $40 million deal, including, you know, and then maybe you get the, whether that includes the ACC money, you may say, hey boy, pretty quickly, you're just not going to, you're going to be so far away from those other schools. If their number is kind of what you and I are hearing, the range is right now, the floor and ceiling ranges right now, that's all of a sudden saying, okay, Notre Dame is going to be just fine without a conference. And so, but it's not, the contracts aren't signed yet. It's not a done deal by any stretch. And so I think we're entering a very pivotal period for the future of the University of Notre Dame athletics. And having someone with this background now beside Jack Swarbrick or along with Jack Swarbrick, I think is the one thing that I can say for certain I feel really confident about over the next six to eight months. I think this part right there is going to be really important. The other stuff we'll figure out later, but that part right there, because that whole Big Ten thing, Sean, I know you have some strong feelings about the assumptions and the leaps that people are making about this.
Well, yeah. And, you know, like a lot of other people, when I first saw that, wow, they're hiring the NBC Sports chairman. You know, like what's your initial reaction going to be? Oh, well, that automatically means, you know, they've got
they're signing with NBC. Yeah, they're going to go to the Big Ten. That's the two leaps that people are making.
And people, you know, the Big Ten thing, that, you know, not as much for me, but yeah, the people are making that leap. Here's, I think, the most important aspect of this. What we've already talked about with Peter Bavakwa, he has negotiated TV rights contracts on both sides, both with the PGA, with the TV partner, and then as head of NBC Sports with the NFL and with the Big Ten. Those are his biggest ones. There have been others, you know, like the Premier League and some other stuff as well. But just because he's only been with NBC for four years. He hasn't, it's not like he's an NBC lifer.
Right.
And because he's got that relationship means that like he's working, you know, he's indebted to NBC and he's going to try to make a deal, you know, for NBC. He's a Notre Dame alum first and foremost, you know, again, going back to the fact that he's a 93 alum. To me, the fact that he's got the experience with NBC, he's working for Notre Dame now. He no longer works for NBC. And again, he was only there for 4 years. The fact that he has all this background, though, with NBC and before that with the PGA negotiating other contracts means that he is arguably the most suited to be sitting in that seat and being a big part of the negotiation for the next TV contract. And, you know, again, the fact he's a Notre Dame guy before he's an NBC guy, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so just
you
because
hope.
He's
you
well,
hope. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you would obviously hope, but again, he's only been at NBC for 4 years. You know, his affiliation with Notre Dame, because he went to Notre Dame, played football for Notre Dame, and has had this relationship that goes back three decades plus. So to me, it's like this guy is going to have, he knows what NBC as of right now, like what their numbers
sure.
are, what they can sure. afford when you're talking about negotiating a deal with them. And then if you open it up with other networks involved, I think it only benefits Notre Dame.
Well, it's kind of funny if you think about it, Sean, when a coach leaves Notre Dame and goes to a school that they're going to play, what's the first thought? Oh, no, he's going to give them Notre Dame's playbook.
Right.
Well, same thing applies here. He knows what NBC can afford to pay
exactly
Notre Dame for football. He knows what other networks are willing to pay. He's been in the negotiations because when he's working out deals with the NFL, and if you look at some of the things that they've purchased in his time, he was part of NBC, oversaw NBC's coverage of the, I'm just reading from the release today, oversaw NBC's coverage of the Summer and Winter Olympics, Major League Baseball, English Premier League, NASCAR, WWE, Kentucky Derby, IndyCar, Indy 500, Tour de France, French Open, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So when you're in those negotiations, you're not only aware of what you can do, you're aware of the numbers being thrown around by your competitors
from other sides.
Okay. You know where they are. You know the deal. You know the number that CBS threw out in order to get more from of the Big Ten. You know what Fox is working with. You know what ESPN is working with. You know their strengths and you know their weaknesses. Hopefully, he's able to use that to his advantage in these conversations. But even if this is sort of a, you know, in NBC's, somebody said this is NBC's Trojan horse. I mean, it's a bit provocative, but let's just say take that part of it out. But even if this is part of the negotiation with NBC, you're doing this because he's not going to leave NBC to go run Notre Dame knowing that NBC is about to screw Notre Dame on the TV deal.
Right.
Even if that was part, like, let's just say, hey, look, we're going to get you over there. We're going to get this deal. We want to be with you. You want to be with us. Here, we're going to go. You're telling me this guy's going to leave the head of NBC Sports to go to Notre Dame knowing that they're going to about to get a really bad deal with NBC that does not allow Notre Dame to compete with the conference that he just signed, was a part of signing a deal with NBC, right? So, like, that doesn't make a lot of sense. He's taking this move. The only way you make this move, unless he's a complete idiot, and there's no way he's a complete idiot based on the success he's had and the things he's done, right? I mean, right. Can we at least assume that? He knows that Notre Dame's about to get in a good financial situation with these deals. He's very aware of these deals. There's literally no one else they could have hired that would be more aware of these deals other than Jack Swarbrick staying. I mean, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
So you've got to feel comfortable that if he's leaving NBC to come to Notre Dame, he knows that Notre Dame is in a good situation to either get a big deal from NBC or the other deals that are on the table for Notre Dame if they leave NBC. And so that's another reason that makes me feel like the numbers I was given yesterday make a lot of sense and potentially getting into the middle to upper echelon of that deal. Because you're not going to be able to hoodwink this guy if you're NBC, right? I mean, you're not going to be able to say, hey, well, you know, we can really afford this. No.
Exactly.
No, that's, yeah, yes, you can. I know you can.
Yeah.
Right? We know the value that Notre Dame brings. And so I think from a pure business dollars and cents standpoint, Sean, that alone, this is going to have an impact.
Who values independence in this whole deal more than anyone else? It's it's Notre Dame alums, right? They're the ones who always talk about, we can't join a conference. We've got, this is part of our identity. Jack Swarbrick is a Notre Dame alum as well, and we hear him talk about this all the time. And again, this guy himself is a Notre Dame alum who has played on the football team before. So he knows that his legacy is going to be attached to that as someone who is just now taking this helm. So I don't think he is going to take that lightly at all. When talking about, do we stay independent or do we join the Big Ten or whatever other conference?
So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, whether it is NBC, whether it is him taking Notre Dame somewhere else. I mean, you know my thoughts on this. I'm done with NBC. I'm tired of it. And, part of me was like, well, hey, this guy knows NBC. Maybe he'll – but I'm like, yeah, but he's been part of the guy that I think has kind of been involved in the fact that they just haven't taken Notre Dame football seriously enough. But again, he's looking at that from what's best for NBC standpoint. Now he's looking at it from the other standpoint, where it's now what's best for Notre Dame. And hopefully he.
And I think that could be a grayer area. If they stay with Notre Dame, exactly how he's able to impact that going forward.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because that's been my big beef with NBC is, obviously, for a while I had a level of loyalty to NBC because they first struck the deal with Notre Dame. They're willing to take that chance. But after it's a while, it's like, okay, you guys are treating Notre Dame like your minor league. You send these announcers that have never done anything to train for the next job.
Right.
And now some of those guys have been very good. They did that with Tony Dungy, and he was great. I mean, I thought Tony Dungy was – him and Mike Tirico as a combination were excellent.
Yeah, I thought so.
But we always knew Mike Tirico was eventually going to move up and move on to Sunday Night Football or doing other things. You know what I mean? That was – And then you knew that Tony Dungy wasn't going to be here at Notre Dame for very long. You knew that wasn't going to be true Drew Brees. And then you have to deal with Jason Garrett. And it's like, okay, yeah, they're not Doug Flutie, but at least they're still not good enough. And Jack Collinsworth and Jason Garrett being your play-by-play tandem. It's like, yeah, you wouldn't do that for NFL.
Well, and
you wouldn't go throw two guys out there that are just like, well, we've never heard of these guys for an NFL game, right? So why do that with Notre Dame?
When this primetime deal starts this season, the Big Ten play-by-play, duo is going to be better than what Notre Dame has. Noah Eagle, I know a lot of people probably haven't heard Noah Eagle before. His dad is Ian Eagle.
Yes, I know his dad.
Right, and he's done like a couple of the – he's been the L.A. Clippers TV voice for the last few years, like right out of college. And it's, again, it's like it's not a nepotism deal because like the name can get you in the door, but you have to be able to deliver. Now, that's been different, I know, with the Jack Collinsworth situation. But trust me, when you watch the first primetime game, I've heard him a few times. He's done, some of these, how the NFL has done these Nickelodeon games, for some playoff games the last couple of years. He's done some of those. I think he did a game for NFL Network last year. The guy has pipes, and he is legit. The Big Ten booth is going to be better than what, assuming Notre Dame is going to stay the same as what they had last year. The Big Ten booth and that primetime booth is going to be better than what Notre Dame had last year.
Who's the color guy for that?
I'm trying to remember now off the top of my head. I'll find it here.
It's going to hit you like right in the middle of the show. We're going to be like mid-sentence talking about something else, and you're just going to blurt out the guy's name like, oh, it's this. Like, oh, okay, great.
Oh, it's Todd Blackledge. He's coming over.
Todd ABC. Blackledge does a nice job. Yeah, he's always done a nice job at ABC.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting, Sean. Those aspects of it are going to be fascinating. Those are ultimately deals that are done that are determined by NBC. But you have to use your leverage in this period to say, hey, look, we need assurances that the product is going to be better, and that's going to be a big part of it. Because if this guy is worth his grain of salt, he's going to at least somewhat try to get the pulse of the Notre Dame fan base. And look, I know that fans aren't as important as they used to be. I realize that. I don't like it. But if fans don't like a deal that's going to be lucrative for you, guess what? You're not going to care. You're going to sign the deal, even if all your fans hate it, because that's your job. But I think a smart AD, and this is something where I don't think Jack Swarbrick had enough thought. I don't think Jack Swarbrick put enough thought into what fans think about things and his engagements with fans. I've never felt that he understood that. If this guy's smart, he's going to somewhat try to get a read into that and say, hey, look, what's the whole point of getting the TV deal? It's twofold, right? Number one is to get your money. But number two is, what is the product that you're putting out there that's going to represent your institution? And would you not want the best that you can possibly get? Hey, look, we're going to be on TV, or, you know, you're going to be doing our, you know, over half of our games. We need to know that you're taking this thing seriously and that you're going to put value in the production content. And honestly, to me, the booth is important, but it's like secondary to me. It really is. Cause most of the time I don't even listen to the play by play, but even when Dungy and Mike Tirico are doing it, when I'm watching the game, I'm mute him anyway, because I'm doing it for analysis sake. And I don't want to be influenced by something Tony Dungy might be saying. I need to be able to look and see it myself. And I may watch it later because I enjoyed listening to Coach Dungy, and he's a brilliant football mind, but I don't listen to that anyway. It's the production quality to me that I've always felt was severely lacking, in my opinion. The Peacock Network doing three spring games in a row and barely getting any better with all of them.
Right.
You know, it's like, you clearly don't take Notre Dame as seriously as you do the NFL. And I get it, because the NFL is a much more lucrative deal. But I want to see them to say, hey, look, this is something you need to start taking us more seriously, because if not, we've got these other people that are willing to make these sacrifices and these changes for us. And hopefully he can kind of swing that a little bit. That would be fun. And hey, look, here's something else I hope that they do. Now as we're talking pipe dream, Sean, it's okay for your Notre Dame broadcasts to have a Notre Dame slant. I'm not talking about from the booth. I'm not talking about, I don't need a Homer play-by-play guy or a Homer color guy. I don't. But can we please stop having Stanford and Miami and all these other schools be the guys that are doing the work at halftime and pregame?
Yeah.
Can we please get more Notre Dame guys involved in this process? They don't have to be even the hires, but make them be the guys that your TV people are interviewing. It's okay to, you know, it's a Notre Dame deal. You're not just covering college football and Notre Dame happens to be the game. This is a Notre Dame deal. It's right. Okay to have Notre Dame people be who you interview at the very least. So I would hope that would be something that they would improve as well. I don't have high expectations for that, Sean. But do you get what I'm saying? Like, I don't need two homers in the booth doing a TV game. I don't think that's a good product either.
You don't have to be a homer, but you know, there. And I realize a lot of people, if you're not a Notre Dame fan, you turn on the TV expecting a Notre Dame bias, I guess, anyway, even though they've never put a Notre Dame person in that analyst booth. But you know, I would have no problem doing a three-man booth. If that's the compromise, if you could get, whether it's, you know, like a Golic or a Jerome Bettis, whoever it happens to be, if you could get a Notre Dame alum in that booth, and then you want to have another analyst in there and just make it a three-man booth for some balance, I wouldn't mind that. But, you know, the question is, are they the best man for the job or the best person for the job? And right. I don't think we've seen that with a lot of, whether it's analysis or, you know, obviously what we just had last year with the play-by-play.
Right. And if the best guy for the job is not a Notre Dame guy for that role, I'm good with that. What I'm more referring to is what we see before, during, and at halftime of these games.
Needs to be more actual Notre Dame flavor.
They're playing Notre Dame.
It's a Notre Dame home game, and we're listening to LeVon Kirkland.
Right. We're listening to LeVon Kirkland get interviewed at halftime of the Notre Dame Clemson game. How about you interview some former Notre Dame player?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, why are we talking to – we're always interviewing someone from the other team, this whole fairness thing. I don't want fairness. It's a Notre Dame broadcast. You're going to ultimately be successful because you are getting the – higher majority of Notre Dame fans to tune in more and more frequently. And honestly, if they were really smart, they would understand that the more Notre Dame slant you get, the more you're actually going to get teams that hate Notre Dame to listen. Because what do people want to see nowadays? I don't like it, but people want to be mad. People want to be enraged. They want to, why did people watch Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharpe yell at each other for a half an hour? It's not for the riveting analysis of sports. It's because they want to be mad.
They want to yell back at the TV.
Yes. And so, like, if you want to get some non-Notre Dame people to watch, who are you going to get to watch? Okay, Notre Dame fans are going to watch. the team of the opponent they're playing is going to watch, but let's do something to kind of get those Notre Dame haters to watch so they can scream at their television, because we still get paid even if they're screaming at their television. And so I would actually lean into it a little bit more, but I just don't see that happening because I don't think they're smart enough to realize that.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. You know, just the fact that you're paying all this money to do Notre Dame home games and you veer away from, you know, really embracing Notre Dame as an on-air product. But again, maybe that changes if there's some influence and some give and take with,
because let's be real about this, right, Sean? If Brady Quinn or Mike Golic Jr., two names that are thrown in there, are doing color for Notre Dame, if Ryan Harris is, well, Ryan Harris might be a little bit different because Ryan's very outwardly pro Notre Dame, but that's also say, he's doing radio.
Yeah.
But if it was Brady Quinn or Mike Golic, they're not going to be like cute homers for Notre Dame. And I'd be willing to bet you that if Ryan Harris was in the booth for NBC, how he would discuss would change a little bit as well. Cause there's a difference between rate, as you know, Sean, there's a difference between the way you're doing radio and where you're doing TV. Cause on radio, people see nothing.
Right.
You have to tell the entire story. On TV, there are certain things that people need to see. They see. I don't need to explain every, you know, hey, Notre Dame comes out, they break, they're going trips to the field, and you know, and oh, now there's you don't need to do as much of that when you're doing play by play, because I can see that. Thank you very much. And so I think that to a degree, Ryan would change. He would be more of a pro Notre Dame guy, which I'd be fine with because he's really good. Him and Paul Burmeister. Or who I thought, I mean, honestly, that should be the TV crew to me. Everybody talks about Brady Quinn and Gus. Look, let's be honest. Those guys work for the networks. They're not coming over here. If Brady Quinn wanted to come, sure. Great. That's wonderful. I'd be totally fine with that. But you've got Paul Burmeister and Ryan Harris right there. There should never be a universe where your radio guys are significantly better than your TV guys. And that's been true at Notre Dame the last couple of years,
where since Tirico's gone, right, anyway.
Well, even with Tirico was great, but the color got except for the Dungy year, like when Drew Brees, I didn't think was that good. Doug Flutie was terrible, you know. But I think Paul Burmeister does a very good job, and I think that Ryan Harris would do a very good job. At the very least, that should be your tandem. But we get stuck with Jack Collinsworth and Jason Garrett.
Yeah, and I mean. Essentially, what Ryan Harris does right now on the radio, I agree. You know, you are doing. You know, he works for the Notre Dame Radio Network,
right? Though.
And guys in his place, you know, like Dan Dierdorf left ABC and he went to work for the Michigan Radio Network. Those kind of guys can essentially play that up. They can play up their fandom and their affiliation with those teams. I mean, but essentially the way Ryan Harris is right now is exactly why probably NBC has never brought in a Notre Dame alum and put in that booth, because that's what you now. At the same time, you can coach that up. You know, you just tell them, you know, you can't, there are certain things that you can't do. I completely agree with you on the Burmeister front, you know, in terms of, you know, the play by play quality, because the guy does TV. He did TV play by play before he became the Notre Dame Radio Network play-by-play guy.
He's done a couple Notre Dame games when Tirico and
some he's filled times, in.
Yeah, and I thought they did a great job.
Exactly. But, I mean, they obviously don't want an over-the-top homer analyst in the booth on TV. And
nor,
I think
nor
that's
do
why
I.
they've avoided it. No, right. And I,
nor
I
do
either.
I.
I think that's why they've avoided ever doing that before. Yeah. But it's another thing when you've got USC and Purdue and Boston College guys sitting in that.
Group. Exactly. And that's what we've had to deal with for how many years, right? First was Pat Hayden being a USC guy. Then it was then it was Todd Christensen, a BYU guy.
Right.
You know, then it was who came after Christensen? You had like Bill Walsh in there for a period of time. Like this guy's literally coached against and beat Notre Dame. Why am I listening to, like, why do I have to listen to him, you know, talk about Notre Dame games? It's just, it's always like, why are we always picking like rivals of Notre Dame?
Exactly.
To do color for Notre Dame games. It makes no sense.
And that's why like Dungy seemed like such a good fit. And I don't understand why.
Well, and Mayock was that way too. Even though Mayock played at BC, I thought Mayock was great. Yeah. You know, I mean, he was tremendous. And we don't get those guys enough, you know, and that's the frustration that I think a lot of people have. So, will this new hire have anything to do with that? I don't know. But a guy can dream, right? I think part of this too, Sean, is it's going to be interesting to see how the Notre Dame tenure for Jack Swarbrick is ultimately viewed. Because I think right now, it's very interesting. You have these three groups of people when it comes to Jack Swarbrick opinion, right? You have the people that say, oh, he's done nothing but phenomenal things in Notre Dame. And then you have the group that have say, well, I hate Jack Swarbrick. I can't stand Jack Swarbrick. They pick like three things that bad happen in football, and they're never going to forgive him for those. And they're going to ignore all the other things. And it's just, I hate Jack Swarbrick. And then I think is the middle where I think most people should be, which is like anybody, there's things he did that I don't like. Some things he did I despise, to be honest with you. But there's also a lot of things that he's done incredibly well. And when you really think back about where this sports program was in 2008 and 2009 when he first took over, and then they look at Notre Dame now, barely a decade past that, what are we at, like 13, 14, going into year 14 of the Swarbrick tenure, I believe. And you look at where they are now, I mean, there's some things that we should look at and say, you screwed up there. But you're going to have to look back, in my opinion, on the Jack Swarbrick era and say, but man, he took Notre Dame athletics a very long way in a little over a decade. And we're all excited about what this football team is going to be. And some of it has to do with Jack Swarbrick. A lot of it has to do with the coaches and the teams and all that. But, I mean, he's done a lot of good, Sean, and I have a feeling that the further away we get from him, the more favorable view people will have, assuming that the three big hires he made out the door pan out. And that's Marcus Freeman, Nyel Ivey, and Micah Shrewsbury. Ultimately, their success is going to determine how he's viewed, but his success goes way beyond that. When you look at just bringing Notre Dame into the modern world, and because people are complaining about you know, you had Tim Priester on, and there's a lot of people complaining about what Brian Polian said. And I don't give a crap what Brian Polian said, because he was part of the excuse making tandem at Notre Dame, where they would always blame something else. Oh, you can't recruit big time players until Marcus Freeman showed up. You know what I mean? Like, you can't recruit elite offensive players until Marcus Freeman showed up. Right. Uh-huh. I mean, it's just the excuse making bull crap. Hey, we lost to Northwestern and decided to go for two, and in the second half when we're up 11, because we don't have a chef. You know what I mean? Like, I can't stand that crap, right? I get tired of that crap. You know, but my whole thing is, if you're complaining about that now, go back and look at where it was when Charlie Weiss's tenure ended.
Exactly.
And look at what the facilities were like then, when their indoor facility was the Loftus, and that was actually until somewhat recently. That was their indoor facility.
Not that long ago.
It was the Loftus. And you look at where they are now, he's also done a lot of really good things during his tenure at Notre Dame that I think if the hires he makes are successful, then people will start to look at those things more favorably as well. That's my opinion. If they're not successful, then people are just going to focus on the things he did that they didn't like. And there's plenty of that as well. And when you're going to be the AD, it's like being president, right? You're going to do things that are just – some people are going to love and some people are going to hate. It's just the reality of it. But that's going to be interesting. But it's ultimately going to be defined, in my opinion, Sean, by how well those three hires do for Notre Dame.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're all relative, you know, like Nyel Ivey came first and then Marcus Freeman, obviously not long after. And we just saw it Shrewsbury. So there's a lot that has to play out. Ivy's off to a good start with a couple of Sweet 16s in the last couple of years. But like, you look at that tenure, 15 years Swarbrick had at Notre Dame. Moose Krauss is the only other athletic director with a longer tenure at Notre Dame. He was the AD from 1949 to 1981, remarkably. And Swarbrick's got the next longest tenure. And I just saw something this way. I can't remember what the exact number of national championships are, but the national championships won by Notre Dame in that 15 years, no one else has, you know, no other athletic director has at any school across the country. You know, the only downside, I guess, if you want to put an asterisk or whatever, is none of them were in football, you know? So when you're talking Notre Dame,
and that's ultimately like, there's someone in the thing saying now, talking about how he hamstrung Marcus Freeman, and I'll never forgive him for that. And it's like, but that's just how some people are, right? They're going to take that couple things that they perceive to be as this negative thing and look at the football team never won, because they don't care that the lacrosse team won a national championship. They don't care that
women's
basketball won a national championship, or
it's nice,
the men's basketball team that went to two Elite Eights or anything like that. They don't care about that. Oh, you got brand new facilities in basketball, whatever the case may be. It's, hey, he didn't win a championship in football, and he did this one thing that I didn't like. I hated what he, how he did, how the whole thing with Tommy Rees. And not that I had a problem, because my whole point with that whole thing with Tommy Rees was, I'm pretty confident, like incredibly confident, that if Marcus Freeman would have been allowed to make whatever hires he wanted to, that he would have kept Tommy Rees on as offensive coordinator. I'm very confident in that. But the way that it was done created an environment in which you almost created tension where none needed to exist. Mm-hmm. And there just were things like that. You know, the Andy Ludwig situation. And this has been my whole issue with Notre Dame going back to before Jack Swarbrick, but it's been one of the issues of Jack Swarbrick as well, is there's the unforced errors that just didn't need to happen. Right. And I think part of the reason that happened goes back to what I said earlier, is he didn't always surround himself with the best people when it came to running the day-to-days of football and athletics. A mistake like that never would have happened in negotiations for a new TV deal or an apparel deal, or, you know, some deal with the, you know, college football playoff expansion, because he would have handled that himself, and he would have surrounded himself with more competent people. But there's too many people from an athletic level, to me, in my opinion. I know you deal with this in other sports as well, Sean, where it's like, this is Notre Dame, and that's who you have in that position? Like, really? That's the best you can do at the University of Notre Dame? Is that right there? Come on, man. And I think that's the thing that I think Jack Swarbrick was a big mistake by Jack Swarbrick, was not having enough competent people in those positions. That maybe we're willing to say, hey, you know, maybe not question him, because I think that can come across as like undermining and disrespectful, but be willing to say, to push back, I guess, is another way saying, no, we need to be thinking about doing it this way. And I think that's something that to a lot of people, Sean, that overshadows so much of the other things that are going on and what have gone on. And the fact that, you know, now we're, the football team is a program that we expect to, you know, compete for playoff berths and championships and those type of things. The facilities need a lot of work in the goog, but the stadium now is outstanding. All the changes are there. You got an outstanding indoor facility. The new basketball facilities are supposedly like outstanding. I haven't seen them yet, Sean, but I know a lot of people say that they're really good now. You could probably speak to that greater. Mm-hmm. Those things are always going to be ignored because Jack Swarbrick was perceived to be a stumbling block to the football team getting where they need to be. Some of that is misguided. Some of that is, I don't know how I can argue with you on that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that was his intention, but that was the result. And, you know, I think those are things, you know, some people are going to say, hey, you know, great job being smart and keeping Kelly, because look what Kelly did afterwards. And other people are going to say, you should have fired him in 2016 and then gone out and hired so-and-so. And those are just ultimately going to be things that people are going to debate until Notre Dame wins again. And if Notre Dame wins with Marcus Freeman, then you're going to have to look back and say Jack Swarbrick played a role in that, because it will be partly due to him hiring Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
And then, of course, these new deals and such that he's going to do. Because, look, Notre Dame should never be using money as an excuse for anything. I've never bought. That's always been BS.
No, I agree.
But when these new deals are signed, I definitely don't want to hear that that there's money issues, or that you can't afford to have a top five highest paid coaching staff, or that you can't afford to, you know, go renovate the goog and things now. No, you got the money. You just signed the deal with so-and-so. Well, that's going to go back to blah, blah, blah. Bull crap. Make your football teams better. And then you're going to make even more money off of those investments that you can then put back into those other aspects. But use this money to get the football program where it needs to be, the basketball programs where they need to be. Then when you start winning there and this more and more money starts pouring in, because this happens all the time when teams win, donors start giving more money.
Right.
Non-donors become donors, right? Wealthy Notre Dame football fans become donors, right? I mean, that's all part of it. And if this guy's smart, he'll understand that we've got to figure out a way to make our football team competitive for championships without sacrificing the heart of what makes Notre Dame, Notre Dame. I still care about that. I don't know if the leadership at Notre Dame still cares as much about, you know, that, to be honest with you, but I do. So if they can find a way, and I think they can do it. They just have to say, we're willing to make certain changes and we're going to do certain things. And we're going to be willing to make NIL a big part of who we are for our student athletes. Do not do it for recruiting, but for our student athletes, we're going to go make sure that our facilities are, there's a difference between the arms race and what we're talking about. Arms race is, I don't need a freaking pool inside, you know, I don't need a slide inside my football facility like it was like Clemson or Georgia, right? Like, I some of these things, like, dude, I don't need that. I don't need air-conditioned helmets, you know, or whatever other silly thing that some teams are doing. But there absolutely needs to be a dining hall for athletes. There absolutely needs to be that. There absolutely needs to be, make sure that the weight room and strength conditioning programs are top-notch. And I've said all this before. You need to absolutely make sure that your mental health department that you have for student athletes, especially in today's world, is as good as anybody in the country. You need to be trendsetters in those areas that do not sacrifice the integrity of your school. Like, hey, we're gonna start paying high school athletes millions of dollars to come play football here. Or we're gonna lower our academic standards so a kid that can barely read and write gets into Notre Dame, and we'll just get him through for 3 years until he gets in the NFL, or get him through for a year until he's the number one NBA draft pick. We're not gonna do that. I support that. I'm with that. But that's not the stumbling block that's keeping you from winning. This notion that academic standards, no, that's bull crap. I've pointed, Keon Keeley was a 3.5, right? Peyton Bone was a 3.3, I think, GPA-wise. Dante Moore was a 4.0 student his last 2 years of high school. Academics were not your issue in last year's recruiting class. There were other issues. Some you can control, some you can't.
Right.
And until you get an AD that understands, hey, we got to stop pinching pennies and be willing to, because Notre Dame, in my opinion, is too much into, they're the kind of people that want to save all their money and then put it in the stock market and then let it grow and do all that. And that's fine. But to me, the true heavyweights and, you know, financial heavyweights are people that understand the value of that with part of my portfolio, but then also saying, but I'm a business, and part of growing a business is I'm going to invest in growing here because I know that investment is going to result in us making a lot more money. Look at our business, Sean. I mean, you look at what this company was making a couple years ago, and now I'm paying a whole lot more out than I was 2 years ago. But so, you know, those checks hurt a little bit sometimes, but you know what? But we're bringing in a lot more now too, because you guys are, the return on that investment has far exceeded my expectations of where we could be. Right. I mean, that's the whole point. And that's how I feel like right. The football program is, you got to be willing to spend money to make money sometimes.
Exactly.
And you got to find that balance. And I feel like Notre Dame doesn't understand that balance enough. And they use phrases like, well, we're not going to get into an arms race. No one's asking you to. I don't need you to have all these silly things that some of these other people. I don't need you to have an arcade in the Goog. I do not care about that. I don't. I really don't. But these things over here, these should be non-negotiables. And these are the things that really matter to you building a championship football team. And until they're willing to embrace that, until they find an AD that's willing to embrace that, they're always going to get in their own freaking way. And I think that's the legacy that some people were just never able to get past Jack Swarbrick, even when you look at the billions of dollars that they've spent investing in the football program. When you look at the Crossword, well, about $1 billion, the Crossroad project, the indoor facility, you know, what they've paid coaches, the new field, all those, the new basketball facilities. I mean, you're getting up to around $1 billion. But the people say, yeah, but look how much they've made. Those sports have made as well. And that's where you kind of get into some, like, yeah, okay, well, we're going to see if this new guy gets it. And that we don't know. That's what makes the whole Jack Swarbrick's legacy conversation, Sean, very interesting.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
No, for sure. And, you know, again, I think a lot of it, a majority of it is going to be tied to the success of these three head coaches that you talked about, you know, from right off the top that he hired: Marcus Freeman, Neil Ivey, Micah Shrewsbury. That's going to go a long way toward how we feel about it. I mean, when you look over the course of these 15 years, I mean, there were definitely a lot of good things that he has done. You know, like you've talked about, and I agree with everything that you're talking about, there needs to be more reinvestment in what you're bringing in. It can't just be, you know, okay, we're going to push this to the bank, because the more you continue to invest, especially where we are right now, you're right, we don't, you know, they don't need all these crazy bells and whistles, mm-mm, but they need, you know, the minimum stuff, like a dining hall, you right, know, that, for the team.
That should be something one is disagreeing about right now, Sean.
Right. That's a bare minimum, I think.
Right. Let me ask you this, Sean. Will his legacy be complete if the basketball, let's say Nyel Ivey wins a championship or two, just for argument's sake, Micah Shrewsbury takes him back to the Final Four, even wins a national championship? Will that be enough if Notre Dame doesn't win a football championship? I mean, I feel like that still won't really be enough if they don't win a football championship. But I really feel like they have to win a football championship for your legacy to truly to be complete as an AD at Notre Dame. That's just my opinion.
I agree, because it's all about football. You know, again, there are people who care about these other sports. We all, you know, to some degree care about these other sports. But bigger picture, people donate that money, by and large, because of how they feel about Notre Dame football, right, and the connection to Notre Dame football. That's right. And we're what, at 35 years now and counting since Notre Dame football last won a national championship. Right. And that's it'll be great if both basketballs win another national championship, but it's still going to be about what happens with the football team, right, at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting, Sean. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of how this goes. I think sometimes the unknown can be fun. You know, it can be entertaining. It's like, okay, well, we don't know what's gonna happen, but at least like with Jack Swarbrick, you're like, man, I hope he does this, but you're like, but after 15 years, it's let's be honest, he's not changing, right? I mean, he's not changing, and you know, now there's that fresh blood that you can kind of, maybe there's that time for optimism now. But I do think that when you ultimately look back at Jack Swarbrick's tenure, there was a lot more good than there was bad during the tenure. And, you know, he had to see them through some issues, and there were certain things he did to see them through those things that I had a problem with. I still dislike how they kind of just, I feel like they surrendered with that academic scandal, where I felt like, why'd you surrender? You did what you did the right thing. You found out this was happening. You dealt with it, you know, and then you just kind of surrendered with the vacating of the losses and things like that. They're just, whereas you watch the North Carolina people, they're literally running fake classes for athletes.
Oh yeah.
And they basically punked the NCAA to the point where saying, okay, do something about it. Oh, yeah, you want to do that? We're going to sue you. And the NCAA back down. They're cowards. But Notre Dame just kind of rolls over whenever the NCAA kind of slaps them on the wrist for something they shouldn't be slapped on the wrist for. They should, that the whole academic thing, they should have been praised for how they handled that. Hey, a few kids cheated. Some girl who wasn't, you know, an employee, she was a tutor and did something like this training staff or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. They were cheating. We found out. They were all suspended. We did that. We said, hey, this isn't who we are. We self-reported. We did it the right way. And the NCAA smacks Notre Dame in the face for it, right? And then Notre Dame, you know, kind of fought it to a degree and then eventually just rolled over. North Carolina is running fake classes for athletes and nothing really ever happened.
Right.
Because North Carolina said, we know ultimately you can't do a dang thing, and we're going to show it because we're going to punk you all the way until you just give up and hope that everybody forgets about it, which now they have, right? How many wins did North Carolina vacate for the fact that they had basketball players, I think on a championship team, taking fake, not real classes, which to me is way worse than some girl writing a paper for me.
Right.
You know? So those are some of those things are things that I get a little frustrated by, but it doesn't ignore the fact that when I go to Notre Dame Stadium and I think about what it looked like my first year covering the team in 2010, and I think about what it's like now, facilities wise, it's great, but you know what's not as good? They showed a lot more respect to the people that covered the program back then when I covered the team than they do now. So those are other things that I look at and say, you know, you've created an unnecessarily adversarial relationship with people that just you didn't need to do. Fans, you know, media, and you wonder what the new AD's approach is going to be to those type of things. I hope it's a little bit different. I don't think Jack Swarbrick did those things on purpose. I just think he didn't care, so he delegates to someone else, and then they're the ones making those changes, ultimately, is what I think is going on. So we'll see how it all. We'll see how it all turns out, but it's a very complicated tenure, that's for sure.
I think so. In my opinion. What do you think are a couple of the biggest feathers in his cap out of this thing?
I mean, really, Sean, I don't think he gets enough credit for what he did to fend off the first attempt at mega conferences, because Notre Dame is in such – you remember this is about 2010 and 11 – and it was when Texas was talking about going to the Pac-12 and there was going to be these big super conferences. And
right.
Remember the Pac-12 was kind of big time back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he had a big role in sort of, hey, Texas, you stay where you are. You do this, you do that. Don't do this. You know, he was a heavy mover and shaker in eliminating the first attempt at super conferences. Where you like say, well, hey, they're going to have that anyway. But Notre Dame is in such a better place to wield power now in that universe than they were then. I mean, they were a dumpster fire of a program when that was going on back then, if you remember, Sean. I mean, they were just coming out of the Weiss era. Kelly hadn't done anything yet. And so, you know, now Notre Dame got a seat at the table for college football playoff expansion, you know, where it's like, hey, this is going to happen. Let's make sure that we do this in a way that's going to help us. And so I think that's a big one to me. And then the other one for me is just walk around campus for 5 minutes near the athletic facilities and then just close your eyes and remember what it was like 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a big part of it as well.
Campus looks like if you haven't been to campus since Jack Swarbrick took over 15 years ago, I mean, it's a completely different looking campus and the facilities are a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, like you talk about fending off the super conferences, and I know that there's not a lot of people who like this ACC agreement, but you know, this agreement with the ACC, it has helped Notre Dame maintain its independence, and you know, college football especially is already at a completely different place than when they joined the ACC. What's that been? How many years has it been now?
It's like 13, right? Is when it was announced
at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. 13 was, yeah.
But I mean, that has helped Notre Dame maintain that independence, and it gave them a fallback, you know, in case some of these seismic shifts happened. And so far they're able to keep that. And by the way, it also, you know, they get a cut of that TV money as well.
I've never understood the pushback to the ACC deal. I actually think that was a great deal. Mm-hmm. The Big East was dying. I have no desire to go to the Big Ten. I guess that's part of it, too, is if you're always someone who deep down secretly wants Notre Dame to be in the Big Ten, then you're not like them going to the ACC. What other conference would it have made sense for Notre Dame to leave for at the time? Not the Big Ten, I don't think. Right. You have so much more in common as an institution with schools in the ACC than you do with the Big Ten, other than geography. The only thing Notre Dame has in common with the majority of the Big Ten schools outside of maybe Northwestern and then Michigan to a degree is geography. That's it.
Yeah.
You have nothing else in common with most of the Big Ten. You have a lot in common with Duke. You have a lot in common with Georgia Tech. You have a lot in common with teams like Virginia, teams like that, even though they're a public school. It's a very high level liberal arts institution. And so you have a lot more in common with Miami as an institution than you do anyone in the Big Ten other than Northwestern. Because a friend of mine was like, well, why is Miami getting the AAU? Are they a good academic school? And I'm like, yeah, it's a very good academic school. It just, people don't think that because they think of the U and, you know, that whole persona. But there was like, there was the football program, and then there was the, I thought the U documentary did a great job of kind of explaining the difference between the football program and the rest of the school, and how it really was. So to me, I've always felt the ACC deal was great. And I think it's been huge for recruiting. I mean, we're talking about how well they've done in Virginia and North Carolina and Georgia. That's a lot of that has to do with the fact that these kids have grown up. If you think about it now, Sean, kids that are going into their senior year, kids that are going into the 2024 recruits, right? You're talking about kids that were six, seven, 8 years old when Notre Dame joined the ACC. So these kids in Virginia and North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia have grown up watching Notre Dame come to their state every year and play football games. That you grow up in that, and all of a sudden Notre Dame becomes more of a, yeah, I know Notre Dame. I've seen them play. They play so-and-so. And it opens up that part of the country, which Jack Swarbrick, I think, was a wise to notice this. That was a, because if you're smart and you want to follow recruiting, you've got to know population shifts.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say, well, yeah, Lou Holtz recruited this player out of Michigan and that player out of Pennsylvania and this, and they should recruit those areas more. I always said this, Sean, go look at the Electoral College numbers for Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan in 1988 when Bush and was it Bush and Dukakis, right? When they were running for president in 88.
Right.
Go look at the electoral numbers for those states, compare them to like Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, then go compare it now. And what you'll realize, there has been a seismic population shift in the nation in those 35 years, which is going to impact where players are coming from.
Right.
And there's just a ton more kids. I did that article the other day, Sean, where I talked about the top five states in producing NFL talent. In North Carolina and Georgia were both in the top five. You're now playing teams from those states pretty regularly, and you're playing on the East Coast pretty regularly because of that ACC deal. Whether it's the Notre Dame football team or the basketball teams always playing games there, the baseball team and stuff like that. So I think the ACC deal has been great for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And it's getting them playing games in front of one of the two regions that has seen the most population shift in the last 20 years, the Southeast and then the Southwest, are the two areas where we've seen giant population shifts, because that's where jobs are, right? As manufacturing jobs go away and those things like that, and things get shipped overseas, blah, 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 blah. People look for jobs, and those jobs have been in the South. And so that's where people go, right? And so you've now got signed a deal to get your football team and your basketball team and your baseball team and your other sports playing in front of those schools every single season. And I think the ACC deal has been great. And I think something else that Jack Swarbrick should be remembered by is he played a pretty big role in the 2020 college football season happening. Very big role.
Yeah, absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely. I think that's easy to forget. At, you know, just like look at the Big Ten, that everyone thinks that, you know, not everyone, but a lot of people think Notre Dame should just jump over to. They were the
Big
first.
Big Ten was dying to cancel football that year.
Yeah, they did. They canceled it. That was the first decision Kevin Warren had to make. He's getting all the pats on the back now for the TV contract that he ended up signing. And then, you know, by the way, little details of that seem to slip through the cracks. But, yeah, I mean, he canceled the football season. Yes. Pac-12 canceled the football season.
And
they didn't bring it back until after Notre Dame and the ACC.
Exactly. And not only did they cancel, he tried to get other conferences to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried to get the Big 12 to cancel. And if Notre Dame doesn't join the ACC, they would have the SEC probably would have been the only team, really, the only Power 5 playing that year. Right. Maybe the Big 12. I think the ACC would have stopped playing if Notre Dame doesn't join. I do. And so you talk about the Big Ten playing. There's two people responsible, in my opinion, for the Big Ten playing football in 2020. It's Jack Swarbrick and Jim Harbaugh. That's it. Because Harbaugh and his team were about the only team that I can remember that made a lot of noise about this isn't right. We want to play. We need to play. And their president at the time was one of those guys, along with Kevin Warren, just dying to get the football season canceled. And he's since been fired and in shame and those type of things. And he was not a good guy either. But those are the two guys to me that if it's not for those two guys and the moves they did in completely different ways, I don't know that the Big Ten plays in 2020. Because if Notre Dame doesn't play, the Big Ten doesn't play.
Yeah.
And that was a playoff year for Notre Dame. It was a big year for Notre Dame.
Yep.
So there's been a lot of good that's come out of the Jack Swarbrick tenure. And that's what makes the unnecessary stubbing of your toe important. Like people talk about, well, Brian Kelly did a great job turning the program around after 2016. No, he didn't. Jack Swarbrick did. Jack Swarbrick's the person who drove the hire of Mike Elko and Chip Long. And they're the ones that are played the big role. Bob Diaco called, Brian Kelly was getting ready to hire a guy from Stanford or from USC strength program after 2016. Some guy was like, you've got to be kidding me. I remember not being happy about it. Bob Diaco calls him because remember that year, Sean, that was when Diaco got fired like really late. Uh-huh. It was like January. They fired him late so they didn't have to pay him.
Right.
So Diaco calls Kelly and he says, hey, I got the strength coach you've got to hire. And so what Kelly was going to try to do is get them two there to be co-strength coaches together. And the other guy didn't want any part of that. And so that's how that's not who Brian Kelly went out and got. You know what I mean? If Bob Diaco doesn't pick up the phone and call him, we're dealing with the U.S. And if you remember, USC wasn't exactly a juggernaut mm-hmm. in strength conditioning at the time. And so it was Jack Swarbrick that did a lot of that stuff that was responsible for the turnaround at Notre Dame. As he went out and said, hey, we need to get these guys and get that. Because a lot of people don't know, Kelly was looking for, you know this, Sean. Kelly was and his agent were looking for, he wanted out.
Right.
They were trying to get any kind of job. They tried to push the LSU job on him. LSU kind of laughed at him at the time. And they hired Tom. I'm like, bro, you just went at 4-8. Like, I'd get strung up if I hired you.
Well,
right
you say,
now.
Wasn't there like talk about the Eagles again or like some other NFL team?
Yeah.
At that point?
I think Lions like maybe, something like that. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he was dying to get out of Notre Dame. And so while he's doing that, Jack Swarbrick's over here bringing in Mike Elko, you know, getting Chip Long. And then Kelly gets on board at the end. And that's not rumor. That's coming from very good sources on those negotiations. And I'll just leave it at that. Hmm. But, he's done a lot of good things, It's just the stubbing of the toe unnecessarily things that kind of frustrate you. Cause you can see when Jack cares about something, he gets it done.
Yeah.
And so it's like they could have had this other things that we're talking about. They could have had this stuff done years ago if it was a priority to him. And that's kind of been the frustration for me. And sometimes I think his ego would get in the way a little bit. You know, hey, I did a great job with Elko and Chip Long, so let me make sure that I got Tommy Rees here, mm-hmm. you know, before I hire a head freaking coach.
Right.
You know, and just some things like that you just look at and say, man, you let it be known that you're willing to pay Tommy Rees whatever Alabama would pay him, but you can't pay the freaking buyout for Utah, you know, to get Andy Ludwig, you know. So all that kind of stuff is like, that's the stuff that people focus on a lot more. And I think I understand it. I just wish more people could say, hey, take a step back, look at this holistically and say, yeah, I didn't like that. But man, he's done a lot of good things at Notre Dame as well.
Right.
And took over a time when Notre Dame, I mean, you remember how bad Notre Dame's football field looked like at the end of seasons?
Oh, yeah.
The last 3-4 years before the turf came in.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, guys, this is ridiculous.
Absolutely.
You know, pushed back against a lot of the old heads that didn't want the scoreboard, you know, and just, I mean, there's just been so many good things he's done for Notre Dame and college football that I just have a hard time looking at his tenure and saying it's anything less than a really good tenure. I can't say great, because ultimately your success is defined by what, Sean? Did you win a championship?
Championships. Yep.
And he didn't in football. They've won a lot in other sports, women's basketball, you know, lacrosse, fencing's won 112 championships, you know, but it's football. But that tends to overshadow a lot of the other good things that I think he's done in his tenure.
Yeah.
He's just done a couple things, I think, Sean, that some people just view as like unforgivable sins. And I think that's kind of odd for people that root for a Catholic institution. I just find that a little
very true. Catholic,
but I just find that a little bit strange. It's an unforgivable sin. Really? Really? Okay. Sure.
Go to confession. I need to step out for just a minute. I'll be right back. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So that's going to kind of that's going to kind of wrap up, I think, this part of the conversation here. We don't know a lot about Pete Bevakwa in regard to specifically what he's going to do, but we're going to learn over the next 7 or 8 months, and we'll continue to try to talk to people and get as many good sources and intel as we can on what he's going to bring to the table and the changes he's going to make or not, and go from there. So we're going to move on to the mailbag next. We don't have a ton of questions just yet, but if you guys want to get your questions in, start dropping them in now, and we're going to jump over to the mailbag in a second. But before we go to the mailbag, folks, do us a favor. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, and of course, some of these questions are going to still be about this topic. But hit that notification bell, share this podcast, give us a 5-star review. Check out our merch store down there. And hey, listen, if you sign up for the message boards at boards.irishbreakdown.com, if you haven't done so, come on, guys. You got to sign up. It's definitely worth it. But you also get a discount to the merch store. So if you want to buy some merch and you're not on the message board, sign up for the message board, and we'll go from there. I'll get you an email. You'll get your discount code in there and all that kind of stuff. So definitely take advantage of that.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.